Fresh Take.
You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.
You're listening to the Fresh Take Network.
What it is, what it do, we are back with the rundown here on Fresh Take Network on We Talk Podcast. This might be the last rundown on We Talk Podcast, actually. There's a good chance.
Oh, my gird.
Update on that as the weeks come. You follow us on Fresh Take 42 on Instagram for all the updates, obviously. We Talk Podcast is leaving on the audio side, so we will be looking for a new home soon. But you can find everything on YouTube after May 25th. Everything will still be on YouTube. As far as the audio side, TBD. But I'm Joshua Adam Lee Marathnot with the talented, the sexy, the dangerous, the Devonier, returning from Europe. It's Devin Seal.
Bonjour. Comment ça va?
How is it going, sir?
I'm good. As you can tell, I'm a little darker. I must have gone to like the Mexico of Northern Europe, Belgium. Yeah. We were prepared for some cloudy weather, and then it was 27 degrees for a whole week.
What was your favorite place you went to?
Ooh, Amsterdam on King's Day was something else. Just friggin' wild. Wild. People selling beers like from their porches. It was crazy. It was a lot of fun though.
It's very, you know, it's really cool right now because you're seeing tourism in Europe go way higher. So I'm getting to hear a lot more friends have a lot of Europe stories now. Because tourism is booming right now in Europe right now. So you're seeing more and more people have really cool stories about Europe right now.
Yes. And you know what? Most of them are going to happen off air because I'm not going to get myself in trouble with anybody on the internet. No, nothing bad. Nothing weird happened. We got to see a lot of towns, a lot of museums, a lot of great art. I did not drink the same Belgian beer twice.
Smart. I like it.
Which was really, really cool. I'm a huge beer fan. So that was like a big deal for me. I got to see some cool World War One stuff, which was really great. Got to go see the catacombs in Paris.
That's sweet.
That was highly recommended. If you can handle like something that's kind of creepy, highly, highly recommended.
I don't know if I could do it because I get claustrophobic.
Not as small as you think it is.
No. Okay.
The rooms are very, very big.
That's good.
You just have to walk down like a spiral staircase for like 5 minutes and then that's your
turn. Well, let's go to a galaxy far, far away. Obviously for people that, you know, you saw 2 weeks ago, Andy and I did Thunderbolts. Devin probably won't see Thunderbolts now in theaters. You probably wait.
No,
to Disney
probably not. Yeah. I might as well wait now. All I know is that they're calling it like the new Avengers. People are pissed off or something like that.
Fucking spoiler.
Well, it was like two days later. They're like, I mean, and you know what? That doesn't really spoil a lot of the movie to me. And I haven't seen any spoilers for like characters and stuff. So I'm just going to keep doing what I like. I think you'll enjoy it.
It was good.
I think so. Is it going to be better than Red Hulk? Cause that was not.
Yes. It's probably top three of this phase of Marvel.
That's not saying much, but I'm happy.
I think the only movie for sure I can say that I liked more than it would be Guardians.
Guardians was, whether or not like you liked Guardians, and I'm not saying you, but people in general, I think we could all agree that Guardians was well done.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was well done too. This definitely, Yelena was awesome. Red Guardian was awesome. But Andy and I did a review of that.
Yes, thank you, Andy, for your contributions, and thank you for filling in for me in this.
And we'll have Last of Us stuff next week. Devin has to catch up on that. Yep. We'll have studio finale season review.
Yep.
Next week.
Review seems about right for that show. Like, are you caught up? Sorry.
In studio, yeah.
Has it turned into a show that like you're talking about every like the story week by week, or is it just it's a one episode and kind of.
I think if we would have seen the episode this week, we would have talked about it.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a whole, and I would say right now, Apple is leading for platform of the year, and I don't think it's really close right now.
You know what? Maybe it just took them a long time to get like their engines running. Cause like, they put out decent stuff. They just haven't had an audience for it.
They feel like how HBO used to be. And they have this new formula now where they have the Tuesday show and they have the Thursday night / Friday show, right? So Studio right now is the Tuesday show and Friends and Neighbors is the Tuesday whatever show. And then whatever they had before, I can't remember what was in the Tuesday. Mystic Quest was in the Tuesday slot, right? And then Severance was in the Thursday, Friday slot. And then we go to this next week. They have this interesting kind of robot show with Alexander Skarsgård. And then they have this golf comedy drama with Owen Wilson that's going to be on the Thursday, Friday side of things.
Wow.
And it's very interesting. I don't think HBO has anything this summer. At least that we would talk about.
Yeah, we would talk about.
Specifically for someone that pays $25 a month for Crave. I was like, might be casting Crave for the summer. So yeah, because I don't see anything that was on HBO that's really worth. I actually don't think there's any show after Last of Us ends and Hacks ends, and now that Andor is over.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's any big show this summer. Like, it's Ironheart. Mm-hmm. Now we got the trailer for that today, which is fine.
I saw the trailer. We can talk about it if you want, or I can just give you my physical comedy.
It's fine.
The guy from Transformers is in it.
I mean, they have Coogler in it. He's on a heater right now. Neither one of us have seen Sinners yet. Want to, but haven't got a chance yet.
Yeah, what a movie that's blown up, hey? Like, from word of mouth has been unreal for that movie.
Yeah. So that's all going on. But let's talk about the one thing that is universally loved right now. Might be the show of the year thus far.
Mm-hmm.
Andor. Season 2.
Okay, so this is how a fandom... I have this is a very complicated, not complicated. It's a long thing. This is how fandom should be. It's positive. It reinforces everything you like about the franchise. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it one of those shows that kept gaining viewership as the weeks went on? Great. But also, credit where it's due to Disney for A, letting people cook, and B, like, just really committing to it. Like, they let Gilroy like just cook, and the results are a bunch of people signed onto this who really, really care about it. Diego Luna definitely near the top of that list. And then the end result was something that like fits so well within the Star Wars universe that people are saying that the new trilogy is Andor is Andor Rogue One Episode 4, like the 12-hour marathon, like just hammer it out. Like to put in perspective, I went back and watched the first 15 minutes of Rogue One.
I watched the whole movie on the weekend.
Up until when they go to Jeddah and they break Jin out.
Yes!
I need
deception.
I needed to because I know, like, we know what happens when Cassian and Jin meet, but I needed to know what happened before that. And obviously remember like the Ben Mendelsohn stuff with Galen. But I wanted to know what happened with Diego Luna's character. I wanted to know what happened with Cassian and him going to that asteroid that's connected and then him killing his buddy. Oh my God, that makes so much more sense now. And I think he even said like on Instagram today or the other day, he was like, for those of you who watch Rogue One after watching Andor season 2, you will see a different movie. And it's like, oh my God, I completely agree.
Wow. I will say, before we get into theories, one of my favorite things from the last episode was when Bale was like, he's talking, I can't remember, I think he's talking to Cassian, and he's like, I was just kind of talking out loud. He's like, when I die, I'm like, you will, I'll go down swinging. I'm like, you won't.
I know.
You won't. You will not go down swinging.
In a matter of days, you will die.
You will die. You will not be swinging. Maybe your arms are like, woo!
Also, just really quickly, bring the Jimmy Smits cut back. Like, what the fuck? How do they not get Jimmy in for this?
So Tony Gilroy said that he was doing another show and wouldn't do it. I did think Benjamin Bratt was great. Good.
Very good. Very, very good. But come on, man. Let Jimmy cook.
Like, yeah, it was weird because when they said General Arcana, I'm like, hey, Jimmy! I think every Star Wars fan was like, where's Jimmy Smits at?
I know. I was like, why does this look like discount Jimmy Smits? And I was like, wait a second.
Because someone that's done that character once.
No, he's done it like six goddamn times.
Yeah.
So weird. That's not my only critique of the show. But overall, episode 7 onwards, like,
yeah,
eight is the piece de resistance.
So on IMDb, 9.8, episode 9, 9.7, episode 10, 9.6, episode 11, 9.5, episode 12, 9.7 on IMDb right now.
Well, we talked about this. This is one of our biggest complaints with Star Wars for a long time, was just putting out mediocre content for the sake of just getting viewership, like us, where we feel like we're committed to watching it, as compared to things that will this literally change pop culture? Maybe not. But man, same thing with Penguin. Like how high we were on Penguin last year is how we should feel about Star Wars. Star Wars should be the ultimate prestige event, whether that be television, animation, or movies. And yet here we are. And yes, we're all very frustrated by Kathleen Kennedy and Disney and blah, 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 blah. But you know what, man, like when it hits, like it almost brings a tear to your eye. Like how do you critique the overall movement of the show? How do you critique the acting? Like friggin'
Mon.
The dark horse of the whole show is her friggin' cousin Vel.
Yeah.
Like, man, she's such a badass. Like, and then you know what the funny thing is? Like, no one's complaining that there's gay characters in this show, and that there's people of color in this show, and that blah 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 in this show. Like, people are just, I don't know why people are unified by this quality of show, but like it just makes it like almost justifies all the commitment that I've put into the franchise.
Yeah, I also think one of the smartest things they did this year is be like, yep, that's it. You get no Star Wars now for a whole year. Like the next Star Wars is Mando and Grogu now, unless Ahsoka comes out before that, but I don't believe it is.
I don't think it is either.
And you're getting the Mortis gods in that, which will be, you know, for us super rad, but I think, you know, give it some breathing time now again, because now you have life into Star Wars again now, right? You have everything that does this, and we'll break it down. But then now you have this whole year of, well, it's going to come back to the theater with the most beloved character that's new in the past decade in Grogu.
Oh yeah.
And Mando. So now you get to build that up and have it Star Wars in the theater again. And whereas I maybe 5 weeks ago didn't think Grogu and Mando, here's my little Grogu right here, Grogu and Mando weren't going to be a $1 billion movie. Now we have a chance to be a $1 billion movie again, because I feel like that momentum from Star Wars kind of feels on the cusp of back to what had been. It's been a very good month or so now for Star Wars, between a solid Star Wars celebration that didn't go over the top with promises of new projects, that focused on a few projects but put a lot into them. The box office that Revenge of the Sith did when it came back out, a very solid return box office.
Yeah.
And then everything that Andor did, and now leading to potential Emmy nominations for everybody involved.
I don't think I could say it better than that. I completely agree with all of those points.
And when I did this, what do you know it? Omega fell down a well. Hunter!
I do want to be careful about over-promising and under-delivering when it comes to Mando.
Oh, it's not a quality thing. it's a merchandise thing on top of it as well, right?
No, I know that. I know that. Yeah. But what I mean, like, this is such, this show exists in such an interesting dilemma because, and I think we've talked about this months and months ago, as we do, we talk about Star Wars friggin' every week. There's very little that you need to know in this show. Yes, it references a spin-off movie, which is whatever. But at the same time, like, you could just go up to someone and be like, what's this show about? This is about the founding of the rebellion.
Yeah.
that sets up the original Star Wars. And because everybody in the whole world has seen episode 4, they go, oh, that sounds pretty cool. Do I need to know anything else? Nope, you do not. It's almost like that this show is not, it doesn't have to really explain anything to you. You know exactly where it sits. You know exactly who's where. You know exactly what job everyone's doing. You know exactly who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. But you also start to understand not everything's as it seems. Seems the writing on the wall, bureaucracy, imperialism, information leaks, and espionage. Like, this is, if you took this show and took out all the Star Wars out of it and then made it like something to do with like the Cold War,
yeah,
it'd still be just as good.
I think that's what Tony Gilroy, I mean, I haven't heard his interview. He did an interview with the guys from The Watch, which I do want to listen to, but they were saying kind of in that side of things, he wanted to give the respect to Star Wars, but also treat it fair to people that had never seen Star Wars. And I think it does a solid job of landing that plane.
It's not overly complex, and it doesn't overly rely on like conceptual knowledge. Like, and I think that's a problem of some of the Clone Wars stuff. Like when you talk about like the Ghosts of Mortis and you talk about some of the Filoni stuff with Ahsoka, like this with the space whales and shit, like we go away from what makes, and I'm partway through the rewatchables episode 4.
Bills. We're talking about that up there about Simmons watching Star Wars again.
The biggest asset that Star Wars ever had was all the visual storytelling that it did to give you all the context clues that you needed to understand the story, having never experienced this world before. When you jump into episode 4, it's very much like the John Wick thing. Like, it keeps giving you answers. You have a couple questions, but they keep answering your questions, and they keep giving you more questions. They keep giving you more answers. And it doesn't always rely on people telling you exactly what the hell's going on. Andor is very much like that as well. But where we start to lose it is all of the, we'll call it like the new canon stuff. Palpatine being cloned. Jumping bodies or some shit like that. I don't even know.
Or Project Necromancer. I just go with.
Yeah. Necromancer. The space whales, the Ghosts of Mortis. Like, these are all things now that I can't describe to my mom anymore. What I did like about a lot of
Night Sisters.
Yeah. Mother Talzin. Like, I don't think a lot of these, background information things really actually make Star Wars better. I don't think the spirit of the wills and the force ghosts and like, I like it better when it's kind of self-contained. I like it better when we're talking about rebellion in space, even like the taxation and stuff, like the idea of like the prequel trilogies work really well because they're not trying to explain any kind of like weird mumbo jumbo flashing arrow type stuff.
What did you think about the TV, the kind of the Fox News idea they put into this?
Oh, what? I mean, do people not watch TV in Star Wars? Of course they do.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was the first time ever that we had, I was thinking of like Shiv just being like, tell them that they're doing this, do it.
Oh, God. Well, you know what?
Maybe like, it's sweeps week. And if I don't get this, I'm going to be
pissed. Yeah, it's the upfronts. I like when those things are tangible in both universes, ours and Star Wars. And for people who are like, oh, like Star Wars shouldn't be political, like, bro.
It's been political.
It's been political for 50 years.
This was one of my critiques was, so Mon, who was probably the best acting performance in the entire show, in my opinion. When she steps out, she does that speech. We know she's about to do another speech that we see in Rebels. Pretty fast here afterwards. Why did they just not stop the fucking thing in the middle and capture her? Like, why did they just like, yep, that's not good. That was the only thing, because they had a whole thing of like, don't let it air. Don't let all that kind of stuff happen. But yes. They never had a thing of like, stop her freaking, you know, those things are called the balcony thing that they have.
Oh, you're saying like, why shouldn't she be arrested?
No. Why? Because it comes back to the platform. Why would they just not keep it there until they can sustain enough guards to get her? So then, and then bring it back so she can't just escape or even have a chance to run away.
Okay. Here's the thing. If you have a bunch of military police or guards in the Senate, you have to remember too that theoretically, the people voted for Palpatine to have those emergency powers and become the Empire.
No, I get all that stuff. Why did the platform just not get stuck where it is? Because it goes out to the middle. And then it comes back. Why not just freeze it so it can't come back?
I don't think they have any kind of master controls.
Sure.
Maybe they do. Maybe they do. But at the same time, she has a right to free speech. You can't. And so what happens is if she makes that speech and then 5 seconds later she gets arrested for making that speech, now you incite way more rebellion from all the people who are iffy, right?
Yeah.
What the show did such a good job showing was that in reality, the Empire doesn't do things directly. They're going to push you and push you and push you and poke you through very subversive means for you to make a mistake or for you to act out. And then they come in saying, well, you guys attacked us first. Therefore, we get to come in and take all your rights away. So if they were just to arrest her right away, that would actually make the rebellion much, much stronger.
Yeah.
What they needed to do was they needed to get her out of there before the Empire can make up some kind of fake news or false charges that they would then tell everybody, and secretly she was actually a spy this whole time. Oh, yeah. And she was, and then people go, oh, I agree with that because the Empire is always right. Therefore, I'm not going to side with the rebellion anymore.
I think that's one of the things they kind of did to Deidre, right? They made her a scapegoat.
That is exactly right. Why does she end up in jail? Because fucking she ain't going to tell her story anywhere else. Like, no one's going to believe her. Her
computer was the one that was hacked into.
That is correct.
It's the easiest choice for her to be kind of... I love when Cyril freaking stood up to her. I'm like, oh shit, Cyril finally has a spine. It was so also devastating. That was such good storytelling by Tony Gilroy. The Battle of Gorm is happening. Cyril has been chasing down this guy for his whole life. His whole thing has been to chase down and kill Cassian Andor. And he pulled the fucking Don Draper on him. I don't think about you at all. Like, what?
Who are you?
Yeah.
I mean, that would kind of make sense, though. I mean, there's not like, especially when it comes to espionage, you don't really know the people who are after you until they're already got you.
Yeah.
It's not like they're going to run into each other 10 times over the course of their lifetimes and then be like, aha, like there he is again. It's not like this isn't like Looney Tunes with Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny. And like Cyril is an interesting character. One of my critiques about this show is that I think it was too long. I also disagree with the idea of dropping 3 episodes at once as the finale. Just make it an hour and a half long episode. Like, stop with the 3-episode thing.
Tony said, well, the idea was they were all mini movies. I mean, well, then just make the mini movies.
Yeah.
Why do we need the episode side of things? But then I guess for Disney side of things, the argument was Disney. I think if Tony had his choice, it seemed like Tony was fine doing the 3 mini movies.
Right.
But then they'd go into a different category and Disney wanted them in drama. So to be in drama, they have to do the 3 episodes.
Sure.
But there is talk about next year, because it'll be the 10th anniversary for Rogue One, of putting out certain these final two movies packages the theater as movies for next year before Mando and Grogu happens on the lead up to Rogue One. Cool. So the episodes that we had here with the Battle of Gore and that stuff with Mon, and then the finale here, putting them into a movie form into the theater.
I would think I'd be unlikely to see that just because I don't go to a lot of pre-releases, but like I'm not against it.
The gore fight I would do.
The massacre on Gorman was friggin' Space France. I was just in France and I was like, this feels awfully familiar. here we go. And it doesn't matter. I think like part of one of Andor's greatest strengths from a quality prestige television show is a lot of like the tracking shots, but which is also one of my, after WoW became, I got kind of sick of, was just the long stretches of watching people walk like down corridors and hallways and shit like that. Like
the Sorkin.
They're very well built. Like they're beautiful. A lot of them in real world locations. They're established. Like I just want to see people talk and advance the plot. Unless you're talking and walking, I don't need to see you storm around all the time. I don't need to see like my biggest critique of the whole goddamn show is just the whole Corellian wedding. It serves literally no purpose.
No.
Her husband doesn't matter. Her friend doesn't matter. No one matters except for Luthen and her and Vel. The kids don't matter. And that's one of those things about Star Wars where, especially within the first, we'll call it the original trilogy or whatever. I felt like George did not get sidetracked with unnecessary demonstrations of things. There was lots of shots of like watching people work at a stall or like a food stand or something like that, but we didn't go through the whole process of like watching them cook a frog. Nothing about me has ever been like, man, I wonder how a Corellian wedding goes. And like they spent so much time making all these costumes and traditions and speeches and sayings and drinks and robot DJs. But why? I basically need to know how things advance the plot. So I need to know about spies. I need to know about Imperial files. I need to know where the fuck Galen Erso is. I need to know where Orson Krennic is. I need to know what Luthen is doing and Cassian's doing. And that's about it. So like three episodes of watching them talk about where to put this goddamn statue, and you have to go on like the traditional hike amongst our people with the band playing at the top. Like, what the fuck?
That's how I felt about when Cass was with that group of rebels on that kind of island. I was like, what is the point of this? I get it. It's kind of the idea to see, well, this is what the Rebels Alliance is like in this. I'm like, I don't care. Realistically for Andor, you probably take first six episodes.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Maybe the first three for sure.
I would love to just do a super cut. So I'm actually a little bit higher.
Get Joe for Grace on the phone.
I'm actually a little bit higher on the first few episodes than I think the IMDb is. Partly because I think it highlights a couple things, but also because of how goddamn beautiful that TIE fighter is.
Oh yeah.
The TIE Avenger, like, first of all, the sets looked good. They made like three different sets of just the TIE fighter for shooting. That's why it looks so good, because every little switch and knob actually works. They're all lit properly. The machine itself is friggin' so cool. It's got heavy missile launchers and like laser cannons and like torpedo tubes. Like, that thing could take down a friggin' X-Wing if it wanted to. And then what I think it highlights, and I think you're right, they kind of overstayed the welcome with it. What I think those episodes kind of highlighted was the fact that the rebellion, in Star Wars isn't really that organized, and at a moment's notice, all of it could fall apart. Basically, that group of people were rebels of some kind fighting against injustice somewhere, but because they're not organized with the rebellion, they come across as basically savages. Now, granted, like, some of that stuff is kind of played for laughs. Like, Cassian totally played those guys into his hands. Like, those guys were hilarious while I was sitting on an airplane. I know nothing else to do. But if they didn't expand on it, I wouldn't have cared. But I think it goes to show, like, even the best laid plans, like the Rebellion had this plans for the other pilot to contact Luthen and to pick up the TIE fighter and blah, 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 blah. And then, like, these random bunch of guys come kill him, and then, like, basically all their plans go to shit. I appreciate that. It just was a little too long. I think you're right.
Yeah. But when we got, I mean, I the Battle of Gore is really good, but when Mon is at the Senate and she's getting rescued and doing the speech, I think that was peak right there. Like, the Battle of Gore is so good, but that was everything. That episode was unbelievable.
Well, friggin' Cassian trying to convince her not to go with Bail's people because there's a spy in there.
Yeah.
Is such great writing and directing. And then I think it, like, not that I agree with every single decision in the story that everyone has, you know, ever done, but, like, it's all like it, like this rebellion, I guess maybe we're seeing this now because the show is, like, so tightly woven. It, like, there was beforehand, as the show's going on, as the rebellion is becoming more and more organized, there's still, like, one or two threads that if you pull at the right place, everything just falls apart.
Yeah.
And what I think the show does really well, especially when you go straight into Rogue One, with the time frame, because all this happens within a matter of days, right? Is how quickly all this moves. They go to rescue Luthen. Kleia kills him. They have to get her off planet. They get her back on planet, and then suddenly he has to go to that asteroid planet. And then suddenly suddenly the whole events of Rogue One happen, which is a matter of days.
Yeah.
But then it ends, and then, of course, it goes right into Episode 4, which also happens over a matter of, like, days, potentially a week. And it's just, like, this cascade of all these different things where it took all these people, all this planning, years and years and years to find the right moment. And then when the right moment happens and you spring that trap, this cascade of events that go, like, this could not happen because of this. This could not happen because of this. Like, friggin' the Imperial spy for Luthen, that redhead guy with the mustache, had access to Dedra's computer for a whole year and sat on that information and sat on it and sat on it and sat on it until, like, the very last minute. And then he goes to Luthen. And then Luthen has to do this. And then Luthen has to go back to
the antiquity store,
blah, 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 blah. Like, all these things couldn't happen unless the first thing happens. And that may have been months ago, years ago. I don't know. I was actually thinking about this as I was watching the show. This has to be one of the very first times that they actually have the time on the cue card, right? Like, BBY. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did it happen in Rogue One? I don't think so.
No.
So
did Clone Wars, the final seasons, have it? No.
Okay. I don't think so. So in reality, maybe it happened with when they turns the red title cards for Clone Wars with the Siege of Mandalore or whatever. I doubt it.
Yeah, though. I think. Yeah, I'd have to go back and check.
But and then finally for Star Wars as a franchise to just utilize that convention, like, which was basically how fans kept track of everything.
Yeah.
It also, like, it was so commonly understood that it makes me also understand how close we're getting to the final end.
Yeah.
And it builds that tension because, like, yes, we know Cassian lives and we know blah, 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 like, you know, until Rogue One.
That's such a crazy, I'm glad you brought that point up, because in that episode, you know that Mon is going to survive this. You know that Cassian is going to survive this, but still, Tony Gilroy wrote and shot a scene like that. Maybe he wasn't the director on that, so I apologize if not, but still wrote a scene in that where you still were so scared. Are they going to get out? Are they? You know they are. You know Mon is in A New Hope. You know that Cass gets the Death Star plans. You know this. But yeah, still that anticipation and that and anxiety, like, fuck, I hope they get out of there, is still there.
You just want to know why so bad. You want to know how so bad. I mean, luckily the answer is the murder robots. I mean, if you want to talk about like some peak Star Wars stuff, like especially within the last, let's just call it 10, 15 years since the beginning of the sequel trilogy. There is some shit that I want to see a lot of. I want to see like when I like the KX droids on Gorman.
Did you hear the story that Tony Gilroy wanted to do with them, but Disney wouldn't give him the money?
No.
He wanted to do a horror episode with them.
Oh, wow. That'd
and be show really how cool. overpowered and how scary they were, but Disney wouldn't give them the money for it, so they couldn't do it.
Kind of like Alien or Predator type thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
because he wanted to show how scary K2 was before Cass... I still think they did a fucking good job because French Revolution guy's daughter, he just fucking threw her like he was Tom Brady.
Yeah, just basically, I'm going to throw you so hard you're going to explode on the inside.
Yeah.
And so like anything live action Order 66, big fan of. The flashbacks with Hayden and Ahsoka, big fan of. The Night of a Thousand Tears, which is the Siege of Mandalore, where there are some KX droids when they're bombing Sundari. Huge ups. And then this, where you just like, I love to see the scale and power of the universe. Why should we be afraid of things? Why should we be respectful of things? However you want to phrase it, like, those droids are fucking the coolest thing I have seen in a long time in Star Wars. And that will stay with me for a long time because like you saw them in the thing just sitting there and you're like, oh, like whatever. Like I've seen
when you walked before. When he walked into the room, he's like, yeah. Shit.
And like, I don't think we even knew what that meant at the time because even in Rogue One, like, K2 like kind of hits some people away and stuff, and you're like, haha, like they're just gonna get knocked out, right? Because he bonks that guy in the head, and you're like, haha, that's really funny. And then you see like their true power, that basically turn you into a sock of meat is just that to me was just really cool. I'm a really big fan of that.
I think now too that you have so many connective tissues now.
Yeah.
From the start of this, from Order 66 to, I mean, like I said, like even with they did such a good job of Mon literally goes onto the ghost Hera's ship and more or less does that speech now to everybody afterwards. And they have Gold Leader take her there and Cassian kind of gets left and everything. But they did so because even in that episode of Rebels, like it's like Gold Leader's dropping you off. So they hit that point so perfectly. You can go on YouTube right now. I mean, a million people. This has happened. It's taken it. So it's like, this is Mon's speech literally right after everything has happened. And the one thing I like that Tony did in this, he didn't fuck around with the Force. And he had the Force healer. And I thought the way they did that was really, really well done. And it made, when Bale said, may the Force be with you, fucking it so perfectly. Because he knows the Force is real because one of his best friends is Obi-Wan. And obviously he doesn't know his daughter is Force sensitive, but he's been around this.
No, I'm pretty sure.
You think he does?
Well, Owen and Lars knew. They said, but they wanted to keep him away from. They wanted to keep him away from Obi-Wan as a bad influence because they didn't want to go down the path of his father.
So Bale, you think Bale knew that Leia was?
Oh my god! Yeah, because he was there for their birth. He knows that they're Anakin's kids. Like,
yeah.
And I think at this point in time, minus the stuff that we're learning from Ahsoka, which I choose to ignore, how the Force works. Man, I think you just kind of know. And then to your point about the Force healer, what I appreciate about how their projection of her was, they also gave time for Cassian to cast doubt that he wasn't sure if he believed in it. And he didn't believe in it. He thought it was mumbo jumbo. which also kind of goes in line with Han at the beginning of episode 4.
Yeah.
Because by the time of the Empire, 20 years after the Clone Wars, and because of the relative scarcity of Jedi, most people never actually saw the Force in use.
No.
Not to the point of a Jedi or a Sith. Like, maybe there's people out there who could, like, mind trick you, but you don't know that they're doing it because you don't know it exists. It's a rumor, right? Anakin says so. Like, he basically, Anakin talks about it in episode 1, how, like, there's stories from pirates in bars. And so Cassian, if you know, he, how would he know what the Force is?
Yeah.
How would Han know? He doesn't, unless you see it with your own two eyes. Like, and then of course Han actually does. Then he says that famous line in the sequel trilogy, like, that's like, it's all real, kid.
Yeah. It's also interesting too, because again, you said watching this changes how you watch Rogue One. Watching this changes how you watch A New Hope, because you know, watching A New Hope again, because The Ringer did the rewatchables, and you have that whole line about how the Senate is gone, because I'm assuming after Mon does the thing and calls him Palpatine, it was dissolved.
Yes.
Because Palpatine's like, fuck this shit, fucking free speech, fuck this.
Well, that's, and that's exactly why you, at that time of the puppet government, I mean, Palpatine's not secretly, Palpatine's pulling all the strings. You need to give the people, or most of the people, the concept or the idea that they're still actually in control. They still, like, the whole second season of Andor, they're talking about the things that they're voting on. They're talking about, like, emergency relief plans, and we're talking about, like, the energy project and stuff like that. They just don't know that it doesn't really matter yet. And then what happens are the people who figure out that it doesn't matter are the ones who then get exterminated, or, you know, they've had rebel sympathizers and then they get removed from office or just killed or disappear or whatever, and then they turn into labor.
Do you know why is Palpatine not at the middle of the Senate? Because he doesn't have to anymore, because now he's the Emperor.
Yeah. He doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Well, technically speaking, he has to follow the will of the people.
Mm.
It just so happens that he controls the ISB, he controls the Navy, he controls Vader. So all these people can vote against. Well, and they talk about it, They talk about it in one of the early episodes where, like, Mon doesn't have enough votes for whatever resolution she wants to pass, right?
Yeah.
Because of intimidation. People are too afraid to speak out, because if they speak out, a Star Destroyer is going to show up on your planet and you never know what's going to happen to your planet. Or all the, like, are you just going to, are they going to steal all the oceans? Are they going to steal all the fish? Are they going to, like, just totally kill all the spiders and just trip mine your planet? Are they going to blow it up? Like, no one knows. And then the other thing too, because no one knows, no one believes you, because there's no news. All the news is controlled. So all of these, like, this is why they wanted to keep the whole idea of the Gorman massacre at bay, right? Because once that rumor starts to spread that the Empire is actually behind all this, that's what changes people's opinion. That's what starts galvanizing you. Then suddenly you're starting committing to the rebellion.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that part about a lot of it, of, excuse me, the real world situation of Palpatine manipulating everything, and the Empire manipulating everything, and how they were overlooking the entirety of everything like that. I'd still like to see a lot more of that. I thought all that's, I mean, I wouldn't mind, you know, where we're going to Mando and Grogu. I'd still like if they do stuff of, like, the rise of the New Order. Because I thought at the beginning, when we saw Grogu at the beginning, I thought we were, like, slowly seeing the pieces of the New Order start to build. And we're seeing a little bit of it, but I like this idea of, we saw how the rebels came. I'd kind of like to see the bubbling of how the New Order came.
And that's a great point. It was all very hidden, and then it's like, because they basically just said, like, there are Sith loyalists everywhere, and it was all behind the scenes, and it's like, it happened again. Like, the Clone Wars happened behind the scenes, and yet none of us learned our lessons, apparently.
What war do you think Luthen was fighting?
So I am pretty sure. So he's part of the Imperial Army, and it's just a rebel uprising. Not even it's pacification of a planet, right? A bunch of people who maybe there was holdouts from the separatists. It doesn't matter, but basically he's just privy to what the Empire is capable of doing, which then makes him go, oh fuck, this is bad. And then he spends his whole life fighting it, with every every being in his body. And in reality, he's just like, for all the, kind of what Cassian said, like for all of the good and the bad that he was willing to give the most out of anybody. And he did. Obviously he did, because he died. But he was completely all in. Every single time he talked to someone, he was demanding more of people, because he was like, "Nah, like, this isn't the time to take a break. We've been taking a break for 20 years. This is the time to fight. We should always be pushing back, always be pushing harder, because you never know what's going to change the course of the galaxy." And it was true. Like, his death, getting Kleya back to Yavin, and her telling the story and talking about Galen and Jedha, is what basically started the civil war.
Yeah.
Like, and like what we talked about a few minutes ago, like, this one thing has to happen, so then this happens, so this happens, so this happens, so this happens, and this happens.
Also, our guy saw more lies.
you mean the gas guzzling drug
addict?
All
you do is lie.
Oh man, I am grateful for his continued appearance, and it sounds like, from what I understand, Forrest Whitaker is like always a yes with this character.
I asked Nick, because I was like, is this either the, like, what do you, I just asked, like, what do you think of Forrest Whitaker's performance in Saga Rare? I was like, it's like, dude, I've never known. I'm like, it is a running joke with Devin and I. We don't know either if it's good or bad. I think it's, I appreciate he does put his whole being into this character.
Oh my God. Well, to look at him over the course of, I guess, so it'd be 10 years since we saw him, and it's kind of come full circle because we saw him on Jedha. I guess we saw him a little bit in Clone Wars too.
Jin!
His evolution as a character, physically and mentally, is what's the most appealing thing about him. Like,
yeah.
We see him as an able-bodied young man in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Then he starts walking with a limp. Then he starts needing a breathing apparatus. Then he has a fake leg. Then he has a second fake leg. And it just keeps going and going and going. So this is somebody, and we're not seeing these things happen to him, but we're seeing that how time has been unkind to him, and yet he's still determined to keep fighting. And he thinks the rebellion isn't doing enough. So the Saw that we saw, that we see in Rogue One, and the Saw that we see even in Jedi Survivor, like, that guy's been through wars and battles and has lost limbs and his insides are scarred. And I mean, maybe it's because he's been huffing gas.
Well, that's why I did the conversation with him and Mon, is like, they've had two ideas of how this rebellion should be fought.
Absolutely. And this goes back to my point about how lightly tied all these things were together. And if one thing falls apart, then suddenly the rebellion falls apart.
Right? If Saw doesn't break off when he does, like in that early Clone Wars, then he doesn't go maybe save Jyn Erso.
Potentially, right? I mean, he's essentially the contact point for Galen.
Yep.
So that's interesting. I would have liked to see a little bit of Galen stuff. I mean, it's probably really hard to get Mads right now.
Yeah, that was my critique. I mean, you don't need to have Palpatine in this or Galen, but I thought it would have been interesting to get a POV of Palpatine during some of this, or of a POV of Galen sending, even the pilot off.
Oh, Bodhi.
Sending Bodhi off beforehand, or even seeing Jyn intercept Bodhi a little bit, or hearing about it.
Right.
And you kind of heard that because Mon's like, you got to stop taking all these ships and everything like that. So that was kind of a minor connection there to Bodhi.
Well, it sounds so, to go back to our time frame about how quickly all this happens, Tivik was the one. So Tivik was the guy on the asteroid that Cassian shoots in Rogue One.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said that the pilot defected like 2 days beforehand.
Yeah.
That's why he was calling for Cassian so many times over the radio. Yeah. So this wasn't a Galen Erso like coordinated effort with people. Like, this is a completely unrelated person defecting.
Yeah.
Tivik knows about it. Saw knows about it. And then they have to try to coordinate to get this. It's the same thing with Claire, right? They have to coordinate this effort to get this one person from here to there so that they can tell their story to the right people.
And well, now you have two sources on this, on the Death Star plans, right? Now you have two sources towards it.
Exactly. And yeah. That's what starts making all these things fall into place was that this, because they all thought that Luthen was kind of crazy and paranoid. Well, now you have different people coordinating the same information, which mean, must mean it's true. And then because they were treating Cassian basically like, I don't know, like a stowaway or whatever, like a guy who can't follow orders, in reality, they now have to start believing him. And that's what pushes all these things forward. Because now you have to get a, like now you have the fight at Scarif, and then you got to blow up the gate. And like,
does it make sense to you that Krennic reported to Vader instead of going to Palpatine? Or do you think he had to be at a different level to go to Palpatine? Vader's second in charge. Palpatine's obviously one. Because you would think in with how much everything was connected here with Krennic trying to get the Death Star launched, you would think in Rogue One, it would almost make more sense for him to go to Palpatine about these issues than to go to Vader about these, go to Mustafar and talk to Vader.
Maybe there's different points of contact for different reasons.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
Like you, that's a really good point. I'd have to look into it more because essentially the whole second season of the show is Krennic talking to Palpatine.
Yeah.
With Yularen or whomever. So in
reality, they mentioned Tarkin a few times, I believe.
Yes, they mentioned him a few times. So in reality, like Krennic's already talking to Palpatine, and I'm sure Palpatine doesn't just have open office hours. I'm sure
I don't think so.
So in reality, like if
it's not bad, like that robot chicken episode is like go for Papa Palpatine.
If something bad were to happen to Krennic, I don't think he can immediately just call up Palpatine and be like, I need to talk to you. I think he has to go through Vader first, and Vader goes to Palpatine.
Robot Chicken has ruined Palpatine for me in so many ways because I just have these like ideas of Palpatine at his desk, like, no, Susan, I can't do the TSA reports right now. I'm trying
to. Oh, I know. Hey,
the energy plan needs to go over here. Fuck.
Yeah, you need to have the blue tabs on the yellow paper. Yeah,
Vader, what do you want? Get.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you were a Mustafar. God damn it.
Yeah, basically. Friggin' Ben,
I just need a Palpatine show, man. Give Tony Gilroy the Palpatine show, please.
Well, I'll push back on that a little bit. I actually think less Palpatine the better.
Yeah, well, I guess in this the side of, I mean, if we would have been able to do where unfortunately Acolyte didn't hit as much as we wanted to, of the Plagueis to Palpatine story. That's what I want. That's what I want.
Well, that's a different story altogether. I don't think we need to see a lot. This is one of the problems of the franchise in general when they've been pushing out too much content, especially around established timeline events, is that we're basically filling in blanks that no one is asked to fill in, which then kind of changes our perception of some of these legacy characters or concepts. Like I talked about how I never wanted to know how a Corellian wedding went, partly because no one ever freaking talked about a Corellian wedding.
No.
Like, not a single time to ever go, oh, what's a wedding like there? If it was integral to the original story, and then you tie it in for me and start describing it to me, then I'm more interested. And it seems like a lot of the shows, Disney's confusing them making up creative things about how to like cook food or have village life as making the universe more lived in, when in reality, I don't think that that's true. I think what needs to happen is you need to have characters interact more. And talking about, like, this is one of the very few shows where I actually don't think everybody's a total idiot.
Yeah.
There are very few, like, so all the intelligence leaks and things that happen are not necessarily because people are dumb, like, oh, I left my password.
They're careless.
They're not careless. Mm. There are people doing very deliberate things to manipulate other people. Luthen does it. Dedra does it. Partigan does it. Lonnie does it. Lonnie is the guy, the Imperial guy that got killed. Like I said, he sat on that information for a whole year. Like, yes, he got sent some documents by mistake, but he sat on that information. He didn't go to the first person he saw. He didn't go like shouting it from the rooftops. He had a bit of a plan. He wanted to ensure his success and he wanted to ensure his protection.
Yeah, he wasn't going to do it till he knew it was time for Luthen to get him off the planet. He's like, exactly. Like, no, I'm not doing this, dude.
And that is a minor secondary character in this show. The rebels on Gorman all have very complex, and the dad is constantly at odds with the young people in the rebellion on Gorman, and they all have their reasons, and both of them are completely correct. They should be doing more, but at the same time, if you do all these things in the open, you're going to attract more attention. Like, so this show is just adults acting like adults, and it didn't rely on all this dumb shit happening, or people who were like, oh, the one time I'm going to leave my code right here for you to take, and I'm going to turn around and it's suddenly gone. No, like, there's real stakes to all this stuff, and that's what makes it so, that's what made the development and the tense nature of the show so important.
I swear to God, if Cassian's kid is force sensitive, though, I'm going to lose my shit.
Do you know what the rumor is?
That's Ryan Gosling?
Nope.
That's my thought.
Poe Dameron.
Fuck, I kind of like that.
I know! I hate it, but I kind of like it. I hate it, but I kind of like it. Oh, I kinda like it.
Yeah, I kind of like it.
I don't think we ever heard her last name.
I kind of fucking love it. Damn it. I thought it was because this Ryan Gosling thing, I don't think they've given, maybe I was speaking. Mistaken, but I don't think they've given the full time period for his movie yet.
I don't think they have either.
So I was like, is it Ryan Gosling, Cassian's kid?
No. The rumor, now, it's not true.
Now I kind of wanted to be Poe.
The rumor is that it's Poe. And it's like, God damn it. That actually, like, that's the one time I want Star Wars to be connected, because it actually, like, Bix and Cassian have like this very well-developed relationship. Like, we cared about her. The goodbye scene was just so incredible, because you think she's saying it to him while he's asleep. She's recording it on video. Too, because like
Cassian, we know it, but the rebels will never really tell his story, really, right? He'll never, Mon and them will never tell his story of how he was crucial to everything with the rebellion. But then his son goes on to be part of the next big rebellion and be a key factor into it.
Well, I think he says that, like, some of us were born into it. Like, doesn't he not say that in one of the episodes?
Yeah.
Which might kind of be the case.
Damn it, I really want this now. Why'd you put this into my hands?
Hey, I just saw it. I saw it on the internet and I was like, God damn it. Like, I usually hate it when things are too convenient. But that one's kind of good. That one's actually pretty good.
Yeah. Pretty good. We'll talk about Tales from the Underground next week. I just kind of wanted to focus on Andor in this one before we get out of here. Any last parts on Andor before we get out of here?
Just overall, so incredibly happy. It's not perfect.
So here's
a looking at, I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you, Mon Mothma dance scene.
Yeah, you didn't like that very much.
No, it took away from the plotting and the politics of it all.
What would you give it out of 10? The season 9. and the show.
The season as a whole, probably 9.0. But if you're asking from episode, like if you're asking 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, those 5, 6 episodes, it's like a 9 point. It's like, basically it's a 9.7, 9.8.
Is this the best prequel Star Wars ever? I said no.
No. No, I don't. Do you consider it a prequel? Like, the prequel trilogy is the Clone Wars and that era.
No, but anything prequel to A New Hope. I still don't think it is. I think that Clone Wars arc of Serge and Mandalore is still the peak for me.
It's a really good conversation. But what we're talking about is, like, you know, to push back on that rating really quickly, we can be more specific with our timelines because it's so well defined. The prequel era is the fall of the Republic and the Clone Wars. The original trilogy, the Republic Civil War, or the Imperial Civil War, basically covers from Rogue One on.
Yeah, let me reword it. Best prequel television show.
We talked about Siege of Mandalore, which just fits so nicely into.
Yeah.
Also, I will say this though. Tales of the Jedi.
Season one.
Well, that or Tales of the Empire Dooku. Pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, what happens, like, we're talking about, like, we're splitting hairs, which is exactly what we should be doing as a Star Wars fan. We should be talking about how, like, we should, I wish we could talk about Star Wars and, like, rate these shows and disagree to that, to this extent.
Is it in the Succession, Mad Men, Game of Thrones, top 10 show conversation over the past 20 years?
If not, it's this close.
It's the best show this year. I loved Lotus. You and I love Lotus. It's better than Lotus. It's a better TV show.
Yeah, this was better than Lotus for sure. It is.
I mean, the bear comes out in 6 weeks, so Bear will be coming for that spot. Wow. But right now, it's Andor.
Yeah, but you know what? Like 2 years ago, we had Shogun.
Yeah.
So, sorry, 3 years ago, we had the last season of Succession. 2 years ago,
take me back.
I know. 2 years ago.
Let me relive it.
2 years ago, we had Shogun. And last year, we had Penguin.
Well, last year, we had Penguin and Shogun.
Was it not?
Shogun was February, and we had X-Men 97.
Oh, I thought Shogun was 2 years ago. Okay, so maybe, no, so Succession was 3 years ago.
No, Succession was 2023.
Yeah, 2 years ago. Okay, never. I'm getting all my time.
Would you mixed up? I would love to just be able to relive those Succession episodes, not knowing anything. I'd love to just be able to.
I did. I did it with Lindsay, and I liked it even more. And because it was, I told her, I was like, I will watch every episode with you.
Yeah.
The only rule is that you can't have your phone out, and you have to watch until the bachelor party episode, which I think was like four or five.
Yeah.
And I was like, if you can, after that, if you decide not to, I'm totally okay. But you have to commit. There's no other way you can do it. I think the same thing with Andor too. Like you have to really.
Oh dude, I was hate watching this show for a bit. I was hate watching it for a bit.
You were hate watching Andor?
A little bit. There were some parts I was like, I don't fucking care about this. The wedding, like you said, some of the stuff with he was with those other rebels on the island. I don't fucking care about this shit. Then we started getting into the stuff on Gore. I'm like, oh, okay, now we're cooking.
And that's kind of what we talked about this with, like, just television in general. Like, all these plots are needlessly complex because it needs to justify 12 episodes. So that needs to justify having people like having the watch time metrics on, like that they need to report on to the shareholders.
It's what happened with Severance. There is so many episodes of Severance. I'm like, fuck this, fuck this, fuck this. And then the final episode happened. I'm like, amazing. And
yeah,
Deadline has Severance right now as best drama. I got a great finale, very up and down season. It, to me, it's Andor.
Okay.
Andor's the best show.
I believe you.
And obviously, like you said, that's the best show you've seen so far too this year.
I'm not sure how many shows I've seen now that I like really think about it. Like,
oh, the priest. We pretty much watch most of the prestige ones. I mean, you haven't seen the Pit.
I know.
I don't think you're going to see the Pit. So,
no. What are you talking about? I've only seen
You've seen the Pit.
You didn't. You don't think I wouldn't watch the Pit with Lindsay?
I figured you would have. I wasn't 100% sure.
Oh my god.
I feel like I'm the only one that hasn't seen the Pit. Then
you'll really like it.
Yeah.
It's one of those shows where, you know how I talked about Succession with her? She was like, you need to put your phone down. You need to like watch this show. And I was like, okay. And then of course we got the dog.
It's apparently just very old school ER all over again.
Oh yeah. In the best way. Yeah. There's good. There's bad. There's traumatic. There's yelling, there's crying, there's happiness, there's some kind of, there's jokes sometimes. Like, it's got everything. And the commitment, so I watched with her, a healthcare professional. There are no medical critiques that she had, like, wow. in terms of like drugs or injections or what to do. The only thing that she said was that when people are doing like chest compressions and stuff and having the bag, it's pretty noisy. And she said that they only do it that way on TV so that you can actually hear what people are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth it, man. It's a great summer watch. Really, yeah, really good.
We're getting, like I was saying before, I don't think we have as many shows to watch. It's a heavy movie summer going up here. Mm-hmm. I have tickets for Lilo and Stitch ready to go. So
hey.
We'll be getting that. I'm not going to see Final Destination this week. I'm hoping to see Sinners soon. Mission Impossible looks like it's not very good. So we'll see how that affects the box office. And anyways, we'll be back here next week with Last of Us. I'm really excited for Devin to catch up on that and talk about that. So next week will be pretty heavy on The Last of Us. Maybe have audio for that. It's week to week. So if not, like I said, follow us on Instagram at FreshTake42. And then everything will be on to every single show will be up onto YouTube to watch until we figure out the audio side of things. Until then, folks, cheers and enjoy the day, people.